You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Last week, 95BFM focused on the environment and climate crisis for our election coverage. Today I spoke with climate justice organiser and Action Station and Kaupapa Māori researcher India Logan Riley, Ngāti Kahununu, Rangi Tāne, Ngāti Rongo Mai Wahine, to see if they think climate change is a key focus this election and how Māori should be centred in climate action plans. I started by asking if they think climate change is being talked about enough this election.
I think this election, definitely more than other elections, is being talked about, and there are quite a few more people who want to hear something being done about it, you know, as an outcome of the impacts from the cyclone that we saw earlier in the year. It is hard to get cut through on that when we also have these other crises like around inflation and unaffordability and housing also escalating. So it's hard to kind of get a conversation cut through on the climate change space, but it is definitely there much more than other elections.
I asked Minister Little today if he feels the government has done enough for climate change, and he essentially said they've done a lot, but there's a lot more to do. Would you agree with this assessment?
I think there definitely has been some really important progress in terms of, you know, the offshore oil and gas ban and passing the Zero Carbon Act, but that was all stuff that happened a while ago now, and we definitely had much higher expectations of action on climate from frontline communities under the current government's, you know, existing term from the last 3 years. And I would say, like, barely anything has been done in terms of really transformationally tackling the issue. And we can acknowledge that the pandemic made that really hard because we were dealing with trying to save people's lives. But in terms of tackling things that also are really life-threatening and will continue to affect a lot of poorer communities into the future, there's really not much at all that we can point to, especially when after Prime Minister Hipkins, you know, became Prime Minister, he scrapped a bunch of policies and got rid of progress on things like, you know, the container rebate scheme, which would help us deal with our waste and that kind of thing.
A lot of people kind of felt climate change was something for the distant future for a long time. But does things like Cyclone Gabrielle and the Auckland anniversary weekend flooding show that we're feeling the impacts of climate change here yet?
Yeah, from my own community, we were seeing increasing coastal erosion in Hawke's Bay and Homwana back in the 2000s, and it was already starting to, you know, pull people's houses away. So I think it really depends on who you talk to in terms of when we really started to see those impacts happening. And we saw even during, I believe it was 2017, in that summer when we had escalating wildfires along the east coast of both the North and South Islands. But the cyclone and the floods really brought that home to much bigger populations here in Aotearoa, and they were devastating. Now, it is the first time that we had, you know, people die directly as a result of those disasters, and that's awful. And so I think that has helped shift the conversation, and it is definitely really present. It's just really hard to be able to have these kinds of conversations about how we prepare for the future when folks are struggling to put food on the table and keep a roof over their head right now because of the economic conditions that we're under.
At the 2021 United Nations Climate Conference, you spoke to and centred the importance of Indigenous knowledge in countering climate change. Can you speak a bit more to what this means?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, first and foremost, when you displace communities in order to get oil or to extract from the land without returning those same kind of gifts and generosities back to the land so it can continue to nourish future generations, you are going to set yourself up for really imbalanced circumstances that have driven climate change. And so we've seen that overseas, we've seen that in Aotearoa. The industries that are closely associated with driving up emissions, whether that be mining or, you know, oil extraction or even farming in our context, it's built off the displacement of Indigenous communities and the ongoing oppression of Indigenous communities. And that includes undercutting our power and sovereignty to implement the solutions that are based on our knowledge. And the knowledge is really important because it's crafted from the environment that we're all living in. You know, it's honed and peer-reviewed and tested in the field over hundreds of generations. And so being able to read those indicators in the environment as well as respond well so that not only the environment's healthy but that we're healthy is really embedded and sits at the core of Indigenous knowledge. And I think about my own home in Hawke's Bay, and, you know, originally we didn't build many of our village sites, you know, on those floodplain areas where Hastings and Napier now sit. Our village sites were built up on the hills and in raised areas because we knew that the several rivers that run through those plains flood and move and shift. And we saw that happen with the impacts of the cyclone. So even that's one really practical way in which we can understand that Māori understandings of how to be in these landscapes is really important, because it helps us survive really difficult climate disasters, as well as ideally thrive in circumstances when they aren't as difficult. And it also means that not only we get to be really happy and healthy, but the animals and plants and that kind of thing around us get to be healthy too, and that's important.
You've also talked to how Māori will be especially impacted by climate change. Are Māori being considered in climate action plans at the moment?
There has been some small shifts in, I guess, the upholding of Māori knowledge in this space. There has been some small steps towards Māori having space within governance to do things about climate change. But what we often see, even in things like the emissions reduction plan that the government put forward, is it's resourcing for us as Māori to reduce our own emissions rather than taking a leadership on, you know, helping Aotearoa reduce emissions overall and helping all of us work together so that we can tackle climate change together from a place that really harnesses those things like Indigenous knowledge and leadership. And so until there's power handed over and until, you know, whānau, hapū and iwi are resourced to really say, hey, you know, like that offshore oil drill can't happen anymore, or you shouldn't build that road right through that area, which will then, you know, encourage more people to drive. Until that happens, then I don't think we'll see the traction that we need to have that can come from Māori leadership in this space.
And a recurring theme has been it's difficult to convince people of climate action when they're struggling with housing or putting food on the table. How do we balance cost of living with climate action?
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, I see the forces that are driving cost of living as also being forces that are driving the climate crisis. And so that's corporate greed that is prioritising profit over the well-being of people and the planet. And we can see that even when a disaster hits, poorer people are more likely to struggle when, you know, their house is being flooded, or to recover from a disaster, or to be able to relocate if the sea level is rising. So those issues really come together. An example that I think of is actually a story that the New Zealand Herald reported on earlier this year. And what we've observed back home in Hawke's Bay is our kaimoana, our seafood, are moving deeper into the ocean to get away from the warming waters. So that means people having to swim out further and go into deeper water to gather food that feeds ourselves. But also with the cost of living crisis escalating, Māori men in particular are going out and swimming further and going into more dangerous conditions to be able to feed their families. And so we are seeing an escalating rate of drowning because of those two factors coming together. And when we have corporations profiting off, you know, the basic goods that should be affordable to everyone, like food and housing, that profiteering actually helps drive inflation and increase the cost of living even further. And that money could be much better invested into things like resilient infrastructure, better trains, that kind of thing. And that's something that, you know, the likes of 350 Aotearoa are also campaigning on, which is, you know, our state-owned energy companies should be investing that money back into renewables rather than paying off their shareholders and that kind of thing. So they're definitely entwined and they go hand in hand, and I'd like to think that when we tackle the cost of living crisis well, that we can also reduce emissions and adapt to climate change well at the same time. And that really is about putting solutions forward that help frontline communities, that don't leave anyone behind, that uplift the poorest and the most struggling in our communities, because those are the same people who are bearing the brunt of the burden of the really terrible economic system that we currently live within that's hurting so many.
That was India Logan Riley speaking to If This Is a Climate Election.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.